Hey guys, welcome back to Fiction Fixation.
We're your hosts. I'm Courtney.
And I'm Rose.
And this week we're going to be recapping the 2023 rom-com Anyone But You, starring Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell.
Yeah. Oh God. Isn't that name kind of unfortunate? Glenn Powell.
Glenn.
Yeah.
Baby, you should have changed that when you got famous.
Yeah. That is an unfortunate name because let me tell you, this guy, out of anyone I've ever seen in Hollywood, is Ken from Barbie.
Oh my God. He is Ken.
This is the Ken of my dreams. Okay. I love Ryan Gosling and he did amazing. He was great. But this guy is Ken.
So you know who I really love from this movie? Sydney Sweeney's character, B, her dad, Dermot Mulroney. Ooh.
Yeah.
Listen, daddy's looking good.
He still got it. He can dust off those knees anytime.
Anyways, our movie starts the way all good love stories start. And that's a meet cute. But this is a meet cute that we actually haven't seen yet.
Yeah, it's kind of like a boy saves girl from peeing her pants, which is kind of a new one.
Yeah. So B comes into this coffee shop and she is like, I'm getting ready to piss my pants. Can I please use the bathroom? Barista says, you have to buy something.
There's a guy standing in line. He's the next in line. And he overhears B begging the barista to let her use the restroom. And so he pretends that she's his wife. And then he tells the barista, can you give my wife the bathroom key now?
He sweeps in to be her knight in shining bathroom key. Honestly, I don't know why he had to go with the ruse. Couldn't he just be like, hey, can I have the bathroom key? And then just hand it to her.
Because, Courtney, we needed a meet cute. God, don't you understand how this works? God damn. Damn it.
I have been out of the romance writing game for a second, so I have forgotten how it works a little bit. Yes.
To you, it would have been more romantic if he would have just been like, here's a key, like slid it to her like a drug deal. I thought the way she was so urgently wanting to use the restroom, I thought she had to like go like explode that toilet or something, you know?
Right. You know what? Like she took a chance on some gas station sushi. She hit a White Castle.
White Castle's been destroying anuses since 1992.
But those are all rookie moves, like getting Taco Bell to go and not going home.
That is a rookie
move. It's like you're asking for trouble.
Listen, if you're getting Taco Bell, you gotta clear your evening, baby. You can't go nowhere else.
You're done for the day. You're done for the day.
Let's quit being gross. B is a cute little blonde girl. Obviously, she is Sydney Sweeney.
B gets that sweet, sweet bathroom key. She goes in, she pees, she goes to wash her hands, but unfortunately, the sink malfunctions and it looks like she pissed herself. So she has to spend some extra time in the bathroom drying her pants.
Yeah, we've all been there, okay? We've all been there where we had to use the bathroom dryer to dry something.
Mine is I lean against the sink and then it's like the front of my shirt just gets soaked.
Yeah. The thing is, this is a rom-com and rom-coms are full of just really silly moments. The female leads specifically in rom-coms are usually such dorks and they're constantly finding themselves in silly situations, like having to take off their pants and dry them in the hand dryer in the bathroom and making weird noises and everyone outside in the coffee shop is like, what is happening in there?
But first of all, that's straight up denim. She's in there forever drying her pants.
The most unbelievable thing is how quickly her pants dried. I do have to give credit to the filmmakers where water splashed on her and it went to her denim pants instead of the white blouse she was wearing. Like they do get points for that. Because that would have been really easy.
Yeah, it would have been much easier for her to go on her white blouse. But honestly, if it went on my white blouse, I'd have been like, oh, this is what I'm doing today. I wouldn't even have tried to dry it.
I guess I'm slutty today. What can I say?
I guess everyone's seeing my white bra. But after she finishes drying her pants, B goes out to Ben, who's holding her coat for her like a gentleman.
So the guy's name is Ben, and their interaction is a little awkward because it seems like B doesn't know how to act around a guy she's attracted to. So as soon as she gets out of the bathroom, she immediately just thanks him, grabs her coat, and starts walking away. And he looks so confused because he was like, oh, I thought we were having a moment. And she's just like running off, which I can relate to. I don't know. I feel like it's a little scary. Flirting is a little terrifying.
Well, flirting is a little terrifying because it's always like, am I reading too much into this? Was he just being nice? Was this a thing or not a thing? But she goes to walk away. She thanks him for the tea and the bathroom key. And she goes to walk away. And he calls out to her because she has toilet paper stuck to her foot. Mm-hmm. And she goes, are you going to ask me out now? And he goes, you know what? Yeah, I am.
Yeah, that's exactly why I was calling you.
Yeah. So they end up going on this little date montage. And it's actually really like wholesome and cute.
Yeah, she goes to his place, which kind of risky. You know, you literally just met this man, which honestly, aren't all of our husbands just random men that we just decided to trust one day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
He makes her grilled cheese sandwiches.
They literally stay up all night talking. She asks him about this giant weapon that he has. She's like, what about the giant wrench? First of all, it looks like a bludgeoning weapon. Girl, you should leave.
Yeah, and it's just being displayed very conspicuously on his bookshelf. Almost like the way a guy would display like a samurai sword. He's displaying a giant wrench.
Do we ever actually get the background of the wrench?
So he says that the wrench was a gift from his mother and that she says something like, things are worth fixing or something like that. It just didn't ring true to me that a guy would be like, oh my God, this wrench is associated with my mom's like favorite quote and I'm going to display it in my bookshelf. It was just strange. It didn't ring true.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. But they stay up all night talking and all of this, and they end up falling asleep, like cuddling. They don't sleep together. They don't have sex, but they fall asleep cuddling. In the morning, B sneaks out before he wakes up. Okay. She just sneaks out of the house and she calls her sister and tells her that she had an amazing night with this guy. And her sister's like, bitch, what? No, turn around and go get his number. While B was gone, calling her sister, having sort of a crisis, Ben's bestie comes over and is like, you must have really liked this girl. You broke out the grilled cheese for her.
The roommate is like, oh my God, Ben is in love. He's in love. Ben snaps, stop, man. I couldn't get her out of here fast enough. She was a disaster. She's a nothing. And the door is open for some reason. Like they just left their door open. Of course, B overhears this part of the conversation because she gets back for that exact moment.
Yep. And you know what? That's it for B. She's like, yeah. Oh, nope.
You could hear her heart shatter from space. And I don't know, but I felt like him saying this, regardless of the fact that he was hurt that she left, he's a douchebag for saying that. Like, why would you say that about anyone? Do you know what I mean? Like, why would you say she's a nothing? Why would you say I couldn't get her out of here fast enough? She was a disaster.
Because his feelings were hurt.
My thing is, people show you who they really are when they don't get what they want.
Okay.
So we fast forward about 6 months. Ben is at a bar with his buddy that was there that day and also his best friend, who's this girl. And he's there to meet his best friend's new girlfriend, who just happens to be, what a small world, his best friend's girlfriend just happens to be B's sister. And so B is also here at this bar and they're coming face to face for the first time in a long time.
It's obvious to all of their friends, oh shit, there's a history here. Mm-hmm. Ben's like, sneak out of anybody's house lately? And she's like, made any mistakes lately?
Ben and B are quipping at each other and they're doing this inches from each other's faces, which always gives like, okay, are y'all gonna kiss or what?
Kiss, kiss, kiss.
But B tells Ben, you'll always be my rock bottom. And she tells him that she's engaged. And So basically that night when they hung out, just happened to be a very small window when B was broken up with her long-term boyfriend.
In her mind, he's just this little man whore that brings random girls home all the time. And in his mind, she's just this disaster who can't ever make up her mind about anything.
Yeah. So now we fast forward to an undetermined amount of time where Ben's best friend and B's sister are now engaged. These two women are now getting married. The wedding is taking place in Sydney, Australia. Like, goddamn.
They are on their way to Australia. It's a 16-hour plane ride. Mm-hmm. He's getting on before her. He's in first class. She's way back in coach with all the peasants.
Ben sees B getting on the plane and heading back to the peasant side of the plane. He decides he needs to go rub it in her face that he's in first class, I guess, or maybe just rub it in her face that he's on the same plane as her.
Yeah, he goes back and he's like, it's very serendipitous that we're on the same plane. She's like, please just leave me alone. I would like to pretend like we are not breathing the same air right now.
The banter is chef's kiss, but it's also very contrived.
Okay, listen, here's the best way I can describe it. It's like you're reading a romance book out loud. On page, it sounds fantastic. When you're reading it, it sounds great. When you start reading it out loud, you're like, that happens a lot. Things in romance books, chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. When you read it out loud and you're hearing voices saying it, less chef's kiss.
Yeah. Oh, honey, check out this part. Her knees buckled. He pushed her against the wall. Their limbs were flying.
What?
Was there an explosion? Like, what just happened?
Here, next time, I'm just going to have you read it silently to yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they get in the air. And then that evening, while they are deep into this flight over the ocean, B wakes up and she has to use the restroom. The one over in coach is in use. So she goes up to first class.
Which you're not supposed to do. So she's sneaking in there. They don't let the poor people into the first class cabin under any circumstances.
They do not. They're like, get out of here, you peasant.
They have a guy with a broom just like shooing people out. Yeah.
But she goes into first class to use that bathroom. But somebody goes into it as she walks up there and she's like, oh my God. So she goes to turn around, but as she's turning, she sees Ben and he's sleeping. He's relaxed. He's reclined back and he has a little eye mask on. But then she sees he has a cookie that he hasn't eaten. And she's like, I'm going to steal that motherfucker's cookie.
What's wild to me is that she has to climb over the person because Ben is on the window seat and there's someone else in the aisle seat. And B climbs over this person to reach Ben's cookie.
Yes.
And her shirt ends up getting caught in some sort of like mechanism, like she accidentally hits a button. And this is the type of stupid shit that happens in rom-coms that sometimes it's like, this movie had way too many of those. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't stack them like this. Because at this point, it kind of feels like this girl, like someone's doing a voodoo hex on her. There's another subplot in here where there's like a witch with like a little orb watching her and being like, ha.
Yes.
And now this happens. Like, something is going on.
It's Sally from Practical Magic.
Yes.
Is writing a rom-com.
Oh my God.
As a child.
Yes. Her shirt is stuck in the seat and she's having to yank at it. So she has to flip herself over so that her butt is hovering over Ben's face and he has no idea because he's sleeping with his eye mask on and headphones on.
She's reverse cowgirl straddling him at this point.
And she starts pulling at her shirt and she's grunting and it's all very like simulated sex scene kind of thing. Like it's just all very like accidentally sexual. It's Sydney Sweeney just like heaving her bosoms like a man wrote this. Like, you know what I mean? Like a man wrote this.
She is like weirdly like dry humping him while jerking her shirt out of anyways, she gets into a new position and she hears the song that's playing in his headphones. All right, we'll sing it for you later. I will sing it for you later. And she's like, what the hell? Because it's definitely not a song you would expect to be playing in a man's earphones.
Yeah.
But whatevs.
And it's playing full blast. Like she could hear it.
It is. But she finally frees her hoodie, takes his cookie, and goes about her way back to her peasant seat.
Where are the fucking flight attendants? Do you know what I mean? Like there was someone just air humping someone. Like who's in charge here?
He has no idea this happened.
Air Australia. We need answers.
What is going on?
And why are we not all getting air humped by Sydney Sweeney is what I want to know.
I would love to be air humped by Sydney Sweeney.
Do you know what I'm saying?
But the flight finishes. They get to Australia.
Yeah, so the wedding party is all staying together. This is a beautiful beachside property in Australia. It looks like a freaking mansion. It has a pool. It's by the water. What's interesting is that, first of all, B's parents are there, obviously, because B's sister is getting married. But then also, Ben's ex is there. And Ben's ex is this Australian hottie who, the second she starts talking, I'm like, if you are speaking to me in an Australian accent, you are disrespecting my marriage. Like, you're straight up disrespecting my husband because you're making me want you. And that's disrespectful.
Like, how dare you?
So Ben's ex, her name is Margaret, and apparently she and Ben dated for a while when she was in America, and we're told that she broke Ben's heart. So this is supposed to humanize him, because this is the other trope in rom-coms, is that the insanely hot guy, he's a sad puppy inside. He's really just sad. He's just sad.
Honestly, the way they make it seem is that they had this thing, they had a relationship, and then she was like, oh, listen, he's not really as mature as I'd like him to be, but I'm looking for non-fuckboy shit. Mm-hmm. So she broke up with him. That's really what it was like. Yeah. And then she really broke his heart because he wanted to be a fuckboy with her.
Yes. What B is dealing with is her overbearing parents, and B's overbearing parents are nagging her about her engagement, because as it turns out, B is no longer engaged. She apparently called her engagement off. Her parents are super passive aggressive about it. They're also under the impression that she's still in law school, which she isn't, because she dropped out of law school. So B is going through a little midlife crisis here, which at 20 something, that is where we all are.
So here's the thing. She met Ben 2.5 years ago, and she was in law school then, which means she would have about a semester left to finish law school. At that point, girl finish. You just wasted 2.5 years of your life and you have 6 months left. Finish.
I mean, but that's the sunk cost fallacy of like, oh, I have to keep going because I'm this far in. But on the other hand, I do see where you're like, just have the option, right? Finish it and then think about it. But then you could always go back if you needed to.
B and Ben are just
a menace.
Are a menace. I don't understand why their families keep putting them in such close proximity. Like, they try to play a trivia game and they put them on the same team, which leads to a fire.
They set off a freaking firework in the middle of the trivia game, and it sets a floral arrangement on fire, like a really big one too, like the kind that's decorative. Those things are expensive, dude.
It also sets B's sister's hair on fire partially.
Can you imagine your hair catching fire 2 days before your wedding?
The way I would have grabbed my sister's hair and just swung her into anything. No, now I'm going to set something of yours on fire that's attached to you. That's fair. Fair is fair.
The way that B's sister knows without a doubt that she is not the main character of this story, because she is just like, I can't complain because this isn't really my movie. This is my wedding, but this isn't my movie. Like, she doesn't even really act that upset. I think it would have been totally reasonable for B's sister to throw a freaking fit.
After this 36 hours of B and Ben together just being a total menace and all of this chaos, the two brides, Hallie and Claudia, Hallie being B's sister, Claudia being the other bride, Claudia's parents, and then Claudia's brother, who is also Ben's roommate, they get together and they're like, they're going to destroy this whole fucking wedding and we cannot let this happen. Claudia's parents are just big old hippies, yeah. Okay?
Claudia's parents are like, if they just had sex, it would diffuse the tension and everything will be fine. And I just love that this is the priority right now, right before the wedding, because this group of people decide that instead of focusing on this imminent wedding and really instead of focusing on the brides, like this is their weekend. No. We're going to focus on these two spoiled adults who can't get their shit together for 5 fucking minutes. And we're going to make the whole weekend about making them hook up, like manipulating them into hooking up.
I want you to think about this. If your sister was getting married and you were making such a scene to where it was noticeable and you started a fire because you were arguing, could you imagine your mom just grabbing you by the ear and being like, you're going to stop this right now?
Well, it's like not a single person in this movie knows how to have a conversation. They're always trying to come up with a plot. It's never just like, hey, why don't you sit down with Ben, I sit down with B, and we just find a way to keep them away from each other. It's 3 fucking days. Like, they should be able to handle it.
Yeah, no. Instead, they're like, listen, we got to get them to fuck so they quit fucking up our days. And so the way they do it is kind of cute.
They essentially have a very loud and contrived conversation for B and Ben to overhear. On Ben's side, they say, oh yes, B really likes Ben. And it's so unfortunate that she walked out on him because she really does like him.
And then on B's side, Hallie and Claudia are like, Ben didn't even know that B overheard that and he feels really bad because he didn't mean it at all. She took it totally out of context and blah, blah, blah.
Obviously, Bea and Ben see right through this. They get together and they're like, look, our families are trying to get us together. And to make things worse, and this is the part where I'm just like, Jesus Christ, does no one understand whose weekend this is? This is not Bea's weekend. Bea's parents fly in her ex-boyfriend. He wasn't even invited to the wedding, and they fly him in and they have him staying in the house where the bridal party is staying.
The parents didn't even check with the brides.
They didn't. That's what I mean.
That, listen, I would have pitched a fit. I would have threw a temper tantrum like the world has never seen. All right. I would have thrown shit. I would have yelled. I would have been like, absolutely fucking not. Listen, I would have pulled that daddy's girl card so fucking fast. Daddy, absolutely not.
Everyone in this movie is so inconsiderate of the brides, dude. Just so inconsiderate of the brides and so concerned with these two characters. And that's what I mean, that it's really a movie about two narcissists that make the whole weekend about themselves. But it's also a movie about a bunch of flat characters who have no personality outside of making these two people hook up, which is so bizarre. Like, I've never cared enough about two people hooking up. Like, literally, even when I'm watching a movie about two people who are supposed to end up together, if they get hit by a train right before the last act, I'm gonna be like, well, that's that, and I'm gonna turn it off. Like, I'm not that attached to fucking anyone. Do you know what I mean?
You know what would have been hilarious if in The Fault in Our Stars their plane just went down,
oh no,
on their way back from Germany,
oh no. Yeah,
and they both died.
Yeah.
Anyways, justice for Claudia and Hallie. Their parents and their friends are definitely not doing it. They should elope from their destination wedding. You know who would be more excited about their wedding? People at a fucking Texas Roadhouse. Okay. Anybody at any restaurant ever.
Girl, it's so true.
Would be more excited about their wedding.
It's so true. So B and Ben, you know, they talk about how, like, hey, this is getting out of hand. They're actually going really far to try to get us together. And also, this is the first time that B sees her parents flew in her ex-boyfriend. So seeing that her ex-boyfriend is there, B turns to Ben and she goes, why don't we just pretend that we got together? Why don't we just fake it so everyone gets off our back and you could make your ex-Australian girl jealous? She'll want you back.
Your ex-girlfriend will get jealous and I don't have to worry about my ex trying to get back with me because he'll think I'm taken. So you know what? He's like, fuck it, let's do it. He's like, let's do it. So they agree to actually pretend like they're together.
Yeah, they come in for breakfast acting like they're super into each other. B's fiance is there. His name is Jonathan. And I have to note that Jonathan is physically the exact opposite of Ben, because Ben is tan blonde and Jonathan is a little bit slimmer. He's still fit, but he's a little bit slimmer and he's very dark haired.
He is. But you know what? Jonathan is cute. Jonathan is played by Darren Barnett. Jonathan is adorable. But listen, I'm not going to lie. Jonathan looks like he's going to rob you on a European street. Jonathan looks like he doesn't have good credit.
I completely agree. There is something sketchy about him. I thought so too. I was like, what is it about him? Because, you know, Ben stands very stoically. And Jonathan's just kind of like bouncing on his, on the balls of his feet.
What up, bro?
Yeah. And it's like, I don't trust a guy that fidgets that much. Like, what are your secrets?
He looks like he probably has more than one baby's mom.
Yeah. So the brides want to go on a hike. Okay. So they force everyone to go out on a hike. We're in Australia. Okay. Listen, I love nature hikes in certain areas. If the weather's nice, I wouldn't mind a nature hike. In Australia, there are spiders the size of your head, my dude.
Listen, everything in Australia is trying to kill you. I'm not getting in the water in Australia. Yes. I'm not going in the woods in Australia. Are you trying to die? Anyways.
Yeah. We get the wackiest scene in this freaking hike because they go to a little lookout landing. And again, this scene is chef's kiss at driving the point home that Ben and B are such narcissists. So they go off in front of the group and they think everyone's looking at them. So they decide to show that they really are together.
They start with B nuzzling Ben's neck. And first of all, she's not even like cutely nuzzling his neck. She's nuzzling his neck like she's trying to start a fucking fire. And then they start with groping each other's butts like they've never felt anybody up before.
Why does Ben look like he's never touched a woman before? Because literally, she's, you know, he asks for permission to put his hands on her butt, and then he just moves it in awkward circles. And the weirdest thing to me is that he doesn't touch the opposite cheek. If he's standing on her left, you would think he would reach for the right butt cheek, but he reaches for the left butt cheek. And that was strange to me.
Then he starts like bongo drum hitting it.
He's trying different things because she keeps telling him like, no, that's weird. No, don't do that. Like, what is... Listen, they were really trying to be cute with this scene, but I was just like, these guys are idiots. I just need like a fucking eagle to come out of nowhere and just carry them off into the wilderness. I'm so sick of them.
Listen, you just put a hand on a cheek and just get a little handful, okay? It's not that fucking hard, all right? And then she goes, she's like, okay, let me try. And she puts her hand down his pants. First of all, who wants a hand of like bare man ass after he was hiking? Gross.
She's really in there.
She puts her hand down his pants and he goes, mind the gap.
Which is essentially his butt crack.
Listen, like at this point, her like fingering your butthole would not be the weirdest thing that has happened on this walk. Okay. While she's in there fondling him, she pulls out this giant fucking spider, this giant huntsman spider. Okay. Which is terrifying. He's terrified. She's terrified. She throws it, but he's like, spiders hunt in pairs. And so he just starts stripping.
He has two articles of clothing on. He has a t-shirt and swim trunks. He removes both of them, which is understandable. What's not understandable is why he flings them across the canyon.
You know what? It might have been the heat of the moment. I'm just saying that if I thought there was a giant huntsman spider in my clothing, I would have also flung it. I would not have been paying attention about where I flung it to.
Ben is still freaking out, okay? But he's buck naked at this point. He is asking B, are there any more spiders on me? Please check. So he's crouched naked and she is like putting her face right there between his legs, really looking to see if any other spiders are there. I don't feel like it should take that long. It really makes me question what he's got going on back there, because it shouldn't be that long to spot whether there's a spider or not.
Okay, I'm just throwing this out there. He has fair hair. Downstairs is probably also fair haired. The spider also seemed to be generally the same color. So maybe she was just making sure that nothing was blended in.
Okay.
Meanwhile, they're friends. Not a single goddamn one of them is paying attention because they found a koala bear.
No one was watching them this whole time that they were fondling each other's butts and then finding a spider and then freaking out and then stripping naked. All of this is happening as all of their friends are deeper into the woods, facing the other direction, staring at a koala bear. Weren't you the one that told me that a koala bear will maim you alive?
Yeah, koala bears are like vicious little shits.
Yeah, I was really hoping we would be able to see that here, but no luck. So because Ben is completely naked, B has to take off her little bicycle shorts and give them to him. Uh-huh. But because he's obviously a much bigger man, they like roll up and they almost look like panties on him.
Yeah. And they just go over to their friends like, hey, what's up? Nobody questions where the fuck his clothes are and why her pants are
Everyone's gone. Sick of them. Everyone's fucking sick of them, Courtney.
Yeah.
But they can't say anything because they know they're not the main character.
Yeah. So Ben and BB, if you will. Rose is looking at me like I absolutely will not.
I don't like it.
So Ben and B, you know what? They're, again, pretending to be a fake relationship, a fake situationship, if you will. And their friends are like, oh my God, it's working. They're spending so much time together. We might actually save this weekend and this wedding.
Yeah.
And they're hanging out. You know what? They're having a good time. They are spending time together.
B tells Ben why she's been carrying a grudge against him this whole time. And it's because when she went back that morning after their night, she overheard him calling her nothing. And he apologizes for it. She accepts the apology. I don't, because once again, why did you say that to begin with? But In any case, they seem to be on better terms now. I don't think they're interested in being a thing at this point, but they are at least not actively hating each other.
Yeah, she asked him essentially, she goes, was that whole thing you told me about the wrench and your mom, was that something you tell all of your one night stands, all the girls you bring home? Was that like a lie? Like, I heard what you said about me. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, that was true. Mm-hmm. I don't normally tell people that. You were special.
You were special. Yeah, so we get a scene where B talks to her ex, who I don't understand why this guy is there. Because hear me out. This guy, Jonathan, B's ex-fiance, was flown in by her parents, apparently tricked into being in this wedding. He said he just got a free flight to Australia and he didn't know what was going on. So he's not even, didn't even go there for B. He got tricked into going there. And at this point, who is he there for? Because obviously B is pretending to be with someone else. It's just so bizarre. But B talks to him and that's when he tells her all of that. And he says he's been thinking about her and she says she's been thinking about him. And so it feels like there's still something there between them.
Yeah, they definitely seem to have a little bit of chemistry there. And apparently they were on and off dating for a long time. Literally since B was like 11 years old, they had been on and off dating. So there's a lot of history between the two of them.
While B is bonding with her ex, Ben is talking to Margaret, his hot Australian ex, and she tells him why she broke up with him, and it was because she was looking for something more romantic, more serious. And so there's also maybe something there. But the way Margaret talks to Ben is as if she knows that door is closed because she's like, you're with B now, so that's never going to happen.
Yeah, so Ben goes straight to B after that. And he's like, hey, listen, he's like, I need for you to make it seem like we're together, but like casually together, situationally together. Yeah. So I need for Margaret to think that she could still make a move should she want to.
Right.
I want her to think that we're together, but just having fun. And that if somebody with more long-term motives came along, you would be willing to step aside and be totally okay with it.
And once again, in this movie, instead of just having a conversation about it, instead of B just going to Margaret and just being like, I hope Ben's not getting attached because, you know, this isn't serious for me. Instead of that, Ben and B decide to pull another stunt during the rehearsal dinner at this point.
Which I don't understand how, what was this supposed to prove?
The rehearsal dinner takes place on a yacht. I want to know who's the one with money here. Is it daddy? Because we're having a destination wedding in Australia on a beachside freaking mansion. And then the rehearsal dinner is on a yacht on Sydney Bay. Like,
it is Claudia's stepdad.
Okay, Claudia's stepdad is the one that's got the money?
Yes.
So yeah, so the rehearsal dinner is on a yacht. They take the yacht out on the Sydney Harbor, nighttime skyline. You know I love it. So romantic.
Yes, Ben and B are trying to show that they're still at the beginning stages, you know, that they're not serious, that they are just young and goofy and silly little geese doing silly little goose things. B's idea on a way to do that is, let's go do the Titanic thing at the front of the boat.
So everyone goes to the top deck for something. And again, this is the rehearsal dinner for her sister's wedding. And she decides this is the moment we need to pull attention away from whatever everybody's doing at the top deck and bring attention to ourselves. So B and Ben go to, is this the front of the boat or the back of the boat?
This is the fucking front of the boat.
Okay, so B gets up there. She does the whole, you know that scene in Titanic where they stand at the tip of the boat and extends their arms and Rose says, I'm flying, Jack.
I'm flying. They do that. And she's like, are they looking at us? And he was like, yeah, but how is this supposed to prove anything? She's like, because this is only something that like super new, young, dumb couples would do. Bitch, what?
Literally makes no sense. Listen, they just wanted to do this scene. Like, this movie to me is just a bunch of cute ideas just sewn together into a tapestry that doesn't make any fucking sense. Do you know, like people were like, okay, I want this trope. I want this scene. I want these comebacks. I want a scene where the girl is staring at the guy's anus looking for a spider. Like, let's work that in there. Okay. Like, I want another scene where they're doing the Titanic. And it's like, is this the same movie?
And they're like, yeah. It'll be fine. It's going to star Sydney Sweeney. No one's going to give a fuck. But so, yeah. Of course. What's the next logical sequence of events?
Obviously, B goes falling into the ocean.
So she Titanics real hard, straight into the water.
They took their method acting a little too far.
A little too far. So B falls into the water. Ben, who is not a good swimmer, has to follow her into the water.
I don't understand why Ben didn't call for help. Because at this point, when he jumps in the water, no one knows. Like, everyone's in the top deck doing their own shit. Like, no one even notices that they're not on the boat anymore for a while.
Okay, so your first thought, they are in the water at night in Sydney Harbor. What's your first thought?
They're gonna get eight.
Yes, that's my first thought. Her first thought is hypothermia. Bitch, no. Sharks. Sharks.
Ben and B are in the water. They are trying to figure out what to do. They see a little buoy, like a little, what are buoys for?
Oh, just to alert boats of shallower water.
Okay, so they see a buoy, they swim up to it, and buoys are much bigger than I thought they would be because they're able to climb onto them and wait there.
Obviously, B's mom freaks out and is like, why isn't the boat turning around? They're like, oh, the water's too shallow. We called Harbor Rescue. They're coming to get them. The rest of the party just goes on without them while they wait on this buoy.
Dude, this must have been the most peaceful hour of the entire wedding weekend when Ben and B were stuck on a buoy waiting for rescue.
So on the buoy, Ben asks B, he's like, why'd you break up with Jonathan? You know, her ex-fiance. And she said, we never fought. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that should be a good thing. And she's like, it wasn't though. It was just too comfortable.
Yeah. And this is where B also tells Ben that the reason she left after their first like really incredible hangout night is because she was scared. She said, that was the first time in my life that I felt fire. And I didn't know what to do except to run. And I totally get that. And he took it as a rejection, which again allowed him to show his true colors. But whatever, we're pretending that he's not a douchebag for the purposes of this movie. B also reveals to Ben that she dropped out of law school, but no one knows.
Yeah. And he said, congratulations, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you made a decision.
Yeah.
You know, you've been kind of waffling back and forth between am I, aren't I, am I, aren't I? But like, you finally made a decision. Like, congratulations.
Yeah. The rescue helicopter comes. How embarrassed would you be if the freaking rescue helicopter had to hover over the Sydney Marina to get you because you were playing Rose and Jack on a yacht? The rescue helicopter drops down these two harnesses. B and Ben put the harnesses on. They are facing each other, kind of chest to chest. And the higher they go, the more freaked out Ben becomes.
Apparently, Ben is a little afraid of heights. He's a little afraid of flying specifically. Mm-hmm. And she's like, bitch, what? She's like, you fly all the time for work. And he's like, yes, but I have a very specific routine for flying. I get on, I have my eye mask, I have my headphones, I have my music, I sleep. Like, that's my, I have my routine.
Yeah. I love it. Girl boss. That's very girl boss of him to not let anxiety rule his life. I love that. B remembers what song she overheard on his headphones when she was doing that weird simulated sex scene of pulling her shirt that was stuck on his airplane seat.
Yeah. And you know what? We told you that it would be like the last song you would ever expect and that we would sing it for you later. And the time has come. The time has come.
La 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 la.
Release your inhibitions. Feel the rain on your skin. No one else can feel it for you.
Anyways, she sings him and he goes, that's my Serenity song.
Yeah.
How did you know that?
He is so shocked that she knows his Serenity song, which fair, that was kind of random for her to know. He doesn't know that she was air humping him on the plane and overheard the song in his headphones.
And she's like, don't ask questions.
But it is a cute scene, right? Of them being lifted over the Sydney Marina, She's singing this song. He starts singing it. You could see it helps him feel better. And then they get rescued and they get dropped off back at the house. And I thought it was funny that nobody was waiting for them, like at the harbor. You know what I mean? Like everyone was just like, whoop.
They stayed at the boat. Like they were still at the rehearsal dinner. They went home to an empty house. So they went home to this empty house. He made her a grilled cheese like he did the first time. Okay, and listen, she bit into this hot grilled cheese and she's like, ooh, hot. And he was like blowing on it. I don't ever want anybody to blow on my grilled cheese while it's in my mouth. But watching him blow on her grilled cheese, I'm like,
oof. Yeah, it was sweet.
I don't hate it.
I think the big draw to this movie was the chemistry that Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney had, especially because they both had other significant others and there was like kind of controversy there. He ended up breaking up with his girlfriend shortly after the press tour.
No.
And so it's really interesting. Sydney Sweeney was engaged, I believe. I don't know if she still is. But yeah, so there was a little bit of like drama there. I didn't buy into the fact that, oh, they have this amazing chemistry, because I only saw clips of their interviews and it looked very forced to me. But in the movie, they do have amazing chemistry.
They do. And so, listen, grilled cheese leads to one thing and one thing leads to another.
They have a very, very hot makeout session, which makes me wonder where the grilled cheese sandwich that was in her mouth went, because I didn't see her chew or swallow it. So
yeah,
plot hole.
Did she spit?
Concerning plot hole. And then they end up in the shower with their clothes on, because it was the clothes they were wearing when they went into the bay. So they're wet, which kind of makes me wonder, why was their first thought when they walked through the door, let's make a grilled cheese sandwich
food
before we take off these clothes that we were wearing in the bay? That's weird. But anyway, they end up in the shower with their clothes on and it's a hot scene. Okay. It's a hot scene of them. I don't know what it is about two people being in the shower fully clothed that's so erotic, because it's not. It's like you're a bad boy. You didn't take your shirt off before getting in the shower.
But yeah, they end up, it looks like they have sex a couple times, like once on the chair, once in the bed, once in the shower. But there's a lot going on, okay? There's a lot going on.
Similar to the first night they spent together, we get a little montage of them that is reminiscent to the night that they first met, because they are like talking and having fun. And you could see that they genuinely enjoy each other's company. Like, you can't hear what they're talking about, but they're like giggling and stuff.
You know what? They have this like amazing night and stuff. And he's like, you know, we're getting really good at this whole faking thing. You know, he's making a joke. He's trying to be funny. And she's like, I don't really know what's real and what's fake anymore. Yeah. Everything I do feels like a mistake.
His face when she says that tugged at my heartstrings.
She essentially held a grudge for 2.5 years because he said that she was a mistake and she just did the same thing.
But again, no conversations being had in this movie. Absolutely not.
Why?
Why
should we have conversations?
Why would you ever have conversations like an adult and discuss things that upset you? Instead, Ben takes the first opportunity he has to sneak away. He sneaks out of her room. Mm-hmm. So he essentially does what she did to him, which is disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day is the wedding day, and he completely avoids her.
He actually goes to run an errand with his best friend, the brother of one of the brides, Claudia. Whilst running this errand, he actually tells his friend that B dropped out of law school. He's just kind of adding fuel to the fire that like B is going through a lot right now. Like, her sister's getting married. She just dropped out of law school. She has a lot going on right now.
Which is fair. This is not the time that B should be entering a relationship. She is going through a lot of changes. And when you're going through a lot of changes in your life like this and you enter a relationship, you're really vulnerable to someone taking advantage of you and ending up with the wrong person. So you should never ever enter a relationship at your lowest point. And B is kind of at her lowest point.
Meanwhile, B is with Margaret, Ben's ex, and they are getting the cake. B and Margaret are collecting the cake, and Margaret is kind of like hinting that Ben's a really great guy and maybe I was too hasty before when I broke up with him. B is like, oh no, we're just like situationally together. Essentially, hey, listen, we were here single together, bored, and just wanted someone to be with for the weekend. And Margaret's like, oh, so like you wouldn't mind if I went after that? If you say you do mind, I won't do it. And B is like, absolutely not. You should totally go after him. I know he really likes you.
Yeah. Margaret is taking the temperature on B and Ben's relationship to figure out if it would be appropriate for her to shoot her shot, which like good on her because Margaret doesn't really know B. Like she doesn't owe her anything. And the fact that she's being respectful of their relationship, I admire that, especially considering that she already has a past with Ben.
Also considering that she is cousins slash friends with one of the brides, possibly both of the brides, friends with, and she probably knows that there's like an animosity. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so you know what? Good on Margaret instead of just trying to hit that. Love a girl's girl.
Love it. Now Margaret has the green light to go after Ben. When Margaret and B get back to the house, they bring the cake. It's this interestingly decorated cake. It's inside of this big box. They set it down on this table. And B's parents come out and they bombard her. We heard you quit law school. What are you doing? So, of course, it becomes a whole thing. Everyone converges at this point. And B turns to Ben and she starts yelling at him for telling her parents. It becomes a big confrontation.
Because the only person B has told is Ben. So she's like, it has to be you.
Yeah.
You're the only person I told. And he's like, I didn't tell your parents. He's like, well, I told him.
His friend apologizes. But at this point, the animosity between Ben and B is heating up again, and they start arguing. Unbeknownst to them, they had placed the box with the cake on top of the dog's toy, and the dog grabs the toy, yanks it. Of course, the box with the cake goes falling to the floor, and no one's surprised because if you show a cake in a movie, if you show the cake beforehand, it's going to get smashed. There's no reason for us to see the cake before the ceremony unless someone's going to go into it or it's going to go into the floor.
Yeah, the cake gets smashed. And even though it wasn't technically Ben and B's fault,
it's not B and Ben's fault that the dog grabbed a toy and made the cake fall to the ground. But at the end of the day, it's the wedding day and they're having another huge argument. So to be clear, every single day of this wedding weekend has revolved around them and they have sabotaged it one way or another. The first game night, they sabotaged it by setting a flower arrangement on fire. They sabotaged freaking rehearsal dinner by going into the Sydney Harbor. And now it's the actual wedding day and they've ruined the cake. How her sister doesn't come for her throat, I don't know.
Her sister's a better person than we are, by far. But you know what? At this point, sister and bride essentially are like, you better get your fucking shit together because we're going to go get married. I swear to fucking God. So you know what? This is really the breaking point, okay? So everybody kind of disperses at this point to go get ready. Everyone's getting ready for the wedding. And then the two brides actually sit down and they have a really long talk with each other. Like Claudia tells Hallie, I've been so stressed this whole week and you've been more concerned about your sister mm-hmm. than you have about me.
That's fair.
They've had a real heart-to-heart talk and everything. And the brides are fine now. But Ben goes over to B's room and knocks. And you can tell he's pissed. He's mad. And he goes, we have one more thing we need to fake, and that's an apology to the brides.
I don't understand why they had to fake
that. And first of all, you shouldn't have to fake it. Yeah. That should be genuine.
Ben overheard that conversation. So he goes over to B's room. He's like, we need to fake one more thing. Excuse me, it should be the most sincerest apology you ever given in your life because you have legitimately ruined these two women's wedding.
You guys should both be on your knees, mm-hmm. kissing these goddesses' hands, telling them how fucking sorry yeah. you are. You should be their little wedding bitches for the rest of the fucking day.
Well, in any case, the wedding ceremony itself goes off without any hijinks, which is a freaking miracle. At the reception, B makes up with her parents, just kind of being like, Mom, Dad, like, I'm going to be okay. Don't worry about me. The smashed cake is at the reception, which is funny because in the back of my head, I was thinking like, there's no cake. Like, I'm pissed as an observer that there's no cake because if I just had to sit through a wedding, I want some fucking cake. You know what I mean? Like, I'm here for the cake, for real.
So during the reception, Margaret and Ben are dancing, okay? Margaret's shooting her shot, okay? They are having this cute little moment. They're dancing, they're reminiscing, and Margaret and Ben are, it looks like they're rekindling something, okay? He's looking at her and he's being so sweet. She looks gorgeous. And you know what? It's just, it's really a lot for B because you can tell B has caught some feelings for Ben despite everything.
So Margaret kisses Ben and the brides notice that Bea witnessed this. And again, this is their wedding. And they are still so concerned with Bea. They walk over to her and they're just kind of like, hey, are you okay? And they say this line that I cannot forgive. I cannot forgive this line. The sister's new wife says, I know it's been a hard weekend for you. Excuse me? It's been a hard weekend for her? Are you kidding me?
You've literally ruined my fucking wedding weekend.
To me, that line just proved to me that these writers were so completely blind to the fact that these characters were so flat that they didn't have their own desires. Because it is so perfectly understandable for someone to just want their wedding to go off without a hitch, like without needless drama that's created by like your own family.
But B is just so over. She's so shooketh. She has to excuse herself to go people watch other people.
B sees Margaret kissing Ben, but from her perspective, it looks like Ben kissing Margaret. And I think to her, it's like, okay, he got the girl and I'm here with nothing. Because again, we have to remember, they just hooked up for the first time the night before. And then Ben ghosted her. He disappeared and he did not talk to her the rest of the time. So you have to imagine this is hurtful for B to witness.
Yeah, so she excuses herself and leaves. But when we go back to Ben, Ben essentially tells Margaret, hey, listen, I've waited for this for a while and I actually don't want it.
Yeah, he realizes that it's not what he wants. He wants Bea. So Ben goes and asks Bea's family where she went. And they're like, we're not sure. She said she's going people watching. And he remembers a conversation he had with her. And he knows exactly where she's going. He could have called an Uber, you know, like a normal person.
Yeah. Or a regular cab. He could have found a horse.
Cell phones exist also in most universes. I feel like this.
Stolen a car.
He could have called her. He could have whatever. Instead, what he does is he goes running straight to the cliff, jumps off of it into the water. And as he's running, he yells, call Harbor Rescue, because he's using this rescue helicopter as a means of personal transportation. I hate this man. I hate this man so much. I feel like he is single-handedly the reason that the turtles are dying in the ocean. Like, I hate him. I hate Ben.
Is Harbor Rescue free in Australia? Because here in America, if the Coast Guard has to come get you, they're sending you like a $3,000 bill. Yeah,
for sure.
If the Coast Guard has to come save you, they bill you for that. So I wonder if Harbor Rescue is free in Australia. Do your taxes cover that?
So the Harbor Rescue helicopter comes, picks Ben up. He has to sing his harmony song or whatever it's called. And they take him. He asks, can you guys do me a favor? I don't know. These must be people sent straight from heaven. Jesus himself must have worked for this department, because they oblige him and they drop him off right in front of the Sydney Opera House, which is where he knows B is going.
Yeah, it's the Sydney Opera House. The nice helicopter rescuer drops him off directly on the steps of the Sydney Opera House where B is, as a grand gesture. The helicopter rescue lady goes, go get the girl.
But Ben runs up to B and he tells her that he left after they hooked up because he was afraid that she would regret it. And she says, it was the first thing. I haven't regretted. Whatever. He tells her he loves everything about her, but he understands that he might not check all her boxes. So he's like fishing for compliments and she doesn't give it to him. She's just like, okay, are we going to kiss now? Because I'm not saying anything nice about you.
Can we just like kiss and get it over with, please? You're like, so that's what they do. They kiss and they really go at it. They go to town on it. They kiss. And then we get a montage. That's where the movie, where the actual plot of the movie ends, is them kissing on these steps.
This is the end of the movie. You know, like most rom-coms from the early days, they would end with the kiss in the end.
Yeah, we get a little montage of the cast singing Unwritten from different scenes throughout the movie.
Yeah, it's cute because you could see that each scene that they filmed, after they wrapped the scene, they had the actors sing a line from this song. And so essentially what we have is a music video from the perspective of all the different characters singing this song in scenes that we just saw. Yes. And it was really fun and quirky. And I love the part where Sydney Sweeney is crouched behind Glenn Powell, who is naked and holding his crotch with his hands. And she's staring up his butthole singing Unwritten. That's a beautiful moment in cinema, I have to say.
You know what? If nothing else, the movie gave us that. The movie gave us that. And you know what? I will be grateful for that. That scene alone should have won an Oscar.
What is happening? There are much better rom-coms out there.
I didn't hate the movie, but like I didn't really like it. I didn't
love it. It had no heart. That's the thing. Like, if you're going to have a rom-com, you need to have heart. They wasted so much time with the quirky, accidental, overly sexual, quirky things instead of focusing on, like, why do we want these people to be together? Why does anyone care? Who are the people around them? Anyway.
So it was loosely based off of Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, which I have not read.
What is that story about? Do you know?
No, I don't know. Let me Google it. Hold on. Primary plot of Much Ado About Nothing turns on the courtship and scandal involving a young hero and her suitor, but the witty war of words often takes center stage.
It's an enemies to lovers, essentially.
It's enemies to lover that centers around banter.
Okay. Yeah, that checks out. Anyway, our teapot is empty for today.
Don't worry. Mori is brewing it on the way. We'll be back next week with another episode.
See you next time.
Bye.